Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen. A manhunt for two fugitives who were accused of robbing a convenience store at gunpoint in Carbondale ended peacefully with their arrest this week, but the nearly two-day search had many Valley residents on edge.
I know one officer received a call from a woman who realized she forgot to lock her apartment when she went to work that day, and she requested an officer to be with her when she went to her apartment that evening.
In response to multiple development proposals in the Mid-Valley and further west, elected officials are wondering how they can plan for exponential growth in the region. This is at a time when Snowmass Village is doing a comprehensive plan, and the city of Aspen is coming off of a year-long development moratorium to revamp its land use code. As part of that revamp, Aspen's elected officials might limit chain stores and restaurants in the commercial core. One prominent landlord is threatening to sue if they do.
Last 5 minutes of the game, you're starting to see some little more pushback on this.
Finally, marijuana in Colorado has become a billion-dollar industry. While Snowmass Village continues its moratorium on pot shops, Parachute will soon have its own drive-by dispensary. It'll be the first in the state.
Residents decided to go ahead and keep recreational marijuana, which now accounts for about a third, I believe, of Parachute's sales tax revenue.
Joining me this week are Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent, Aspen Daily News editor Curtis Wackerly, and Aspen Times reporter Scott Condon. I will speak with them first about the manhunt in Basalt. Just to catch people up to speed, there was a armed robbery at the convenience store in Carbondale last week, and the Carbondale Police Department did some sleuthing and figured out who these guys were. The papers published a story about who these guys were, had their mug shots, and then pretty boldly, they board a bus at the intercept lot days later.
It was actually in Snowmass.
Okay. So
that's when they got made. They were getting on the bus in Snowmass, taking it down to the intercept lot, caught a transfer bus headed down valley. But I believe it was the driver on the first leg going down to the intercept lot that ID'd him.
He recognized them, so he reported it to the – he called the police.
Right. He called the police, and there was some communication going on via the radio, but really they had the bus driver get on his cell phone so it wouldn't be aired over the radio in order to alert these guys, which, of course, is not protocol. You're not supposed to be talking on your cell phone as a bus driver, but that was the instruction under these circumstances.
Mm-hmm. And then we know what happened from there with the reports. Scott, you're down there on the ground reporting on this, and your neighborhood, and I'm sure, Randy, you too, in Carbondale. I know that people were asking me, like, have they caught him yet? Should we lock the door? You know, we don't normally have to lock our doors around here. And I think knowing that there's some desperation among these fugitives, that maybe they'd crawl into a car or a garage or, you know, in a closet.
Right. I think on the day that the buses stopped, I think there were quite a few nervous people in Holland Hills because they saw obviously a huge law enforcement presence in their neighborhood, and that was happening by about 9:30 a.m. And I think the first beacon alert went out at roughly 5:30-ish. So I think there was a lot of people kind of bewildered about what was going on. And then I know one officer received a call last evening before the suspects were apprehended from a woman who realized she'd forgot to lock her apartment when she went to work that day, and she requested an officer to be with her when she went to her apartement that evening.
Yeah.
You know, so that kind of, you know, rightfully shows the mentality that, you know, people were a little bit scared. There was also a report just within an hour of when the two suspects were arrested, there was a report on the hillside further up in Basalt of a homeowner reporting some suspicious seeming events, but that turned out to be unrelated.
Yeah, so people were on edge, for sure.
People were on edge.
Well, so unusual. Armed robberies here happen not even half a dozen times a year in the valley, and then the jumping out of the bus, this was one time when it was, I think, reasonable to be on edge.
Absolutely. Scott, can you give us, or any of you, any insight as to what happened at the Holland Hills bus in which the police could not apprehend them? I mean, did they just outrun them, or did they not expect that to happen?
Well, it's my understanding that the stop actually was made. There were three other people on the bus besides the two suspects. One of the passengers made a request to stop at that specific stop along Bishop Drive or Bishop Road, something in Holland Hills. I think the driver, from talking to the supervisors, the driver was weighing, well, you know, do I stop and get these guys? Do I risk getting these guys agitated? Do I not stop? And then the guy who's trying to get off the bus is wondering what the hell's going on. So he was kind of in a no-win situation.
Yeah.
And he ends up stopping at that stop. I don't know if law enforcement officials were expecting the bus to stop at that particular moment or not.
Right, so they weren't ready.
A detail that kind of got lost in the shuffle. But, you know, when you think about it, I mean, definitely there have been some questions of, well, how are these guys able to get away at that point? But, you know, I mean, I think we need to credit the law enforcement agencies that are in our valley, because this could have been a scenario where, you know, two guys are running and one or both of them ends up getting shot right off the bat, and then the story takes on a whole different angle.
Yeah, nobody got hurt, which is a remarkable and praiseworthy thing.
Yeah, you just didn't know how desperate those kids would get, you know, if they're out there freezing, and they were.
Right, one of them didn't have a shoe, and it's believed that they, you know, they're up at the top of the Arbony-Kittle Trail. I mean, it's a real steep, loose, rocky slope to get down to the Frying Pan Valley.
Yeah.
It's believed that's how they went there.
And then it'd be surprising to get clipped out or anything.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
I don't know why they didn't leave the valley.
I didn't.
If you successfully pull off an armed robbery, and I don't have an official source, but it was, you know, a few hundred dollars from what I heard. Mm-hmm. You know, go to Denver and have your weekend. Don't go to Snowmass.
I mean, 19 years old, basically a kid.
Let's move on to some of the headlines, Scott, that you had. I found it interesting that they're finally looking at a coordinated growth plan. And it comes on at the same time as a comp plan being done for Snowmass Village. They're doing that on Thursday night, kind of a speed planning session for citizens. And also what Aspen just did with a development moratorium and putting the brakes on redoing the land use code to try to stop growth. And the chain store regulations, I think, are part of that. And then down in Glenwood and beyond, you know, I think there's got to be some sort of coordinated growth. And so, Scott, can you elaborate a little bit on what they're thinking, since we've got, what, hundreds of residential homes being planned along with several hundred square feet of commercial, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, I think it's a laudable idea. Unfortunately, I don't know that it's not going to be able to be applied to much of the situation that exists now, because you've got active land use applications, and, you know, as you guys all know, as seasoned reporters, you can't change the rules in the middle of the review of an application. So Eagle County's reviewing two major projects, the Tree Farm, which is across Highway 82 from Whole Foods. That's got roughly 340 residential units and 135,000 square feet of commercial space. And there is another project called The Fields, which is across Highway 82 from the entrance to Blue Lake subdivision, and that's the proposal for up to 110 residences. So you've got those two projects, and then Default is looking at a handful of projects, and the two elected boards got together last week, and there was a strong push by several of the Default Council members to say, hey, maybe we should do some type of coordinated planning here. And it came in two forms, the request. I mean, there were some people that were, you know, talking about coordinating traffic studies and looking at how much can actually be absorbed, and then saying, you know, we'll just approve the number of projects that can be accommodated. Auden Schindler, who is a newcomer to government, had a different kind of approach, and that was to say, you know, maybe we're making this too complicated, and we don't really need to coordinate these land use master plans as much as just prioritizing projects and saying what's closest to the urban core, or in that case, the town core,
mm-hmm.
and what's farthest out in the rural areas, and let's give a priority to the ones that are closest to the existing services.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea. Unfortunately, I don't know that government can adapt to something that...
Move that fast? Yeah, this should have been done 10 years ago, probably.
Yeah, you know, and that's another thing. I mean, people have pointed out to the Eagle County master plan for the Roaring Fork Valley portion of the county. It was completed, it was underway during the recession. And, you know, when you look at the list of people who participated, it is heavily, heavily dominated by large property owners and people in the land use development business.
Yeah.
You didn't get a lot of rank and file participation. You know, the government certainly tried to get interest in it. They put out press releases saying, hey, you need to get involved. But, you know, during the recession when people were scraping by, either finding themselves out of work or working a couple jobs or having their hours cut back, whatever, I don't think participating in their local land use master plan was top of mind right then.
Right. And Randy, is there any sort of comp plan for Garfield County or Glenwood Springs or anything along Highway 82?
Sure, they both have land use plans, and
they're updated.
Yeah,
they are.
Yeah, the last commissioner's race where Michael Sullivan ran against Tom Jankowski, Sullivan was on the planning, or he was an alternate on the planning commission, and his campaign was based on what is a use by right, and you know how. Proposals would be managed in Garfield County, feeling that the plan that is there favors development too much. Although the county has been they haven't just rubber stamped this Cattle Creek proposal that still sort of remains on life support.
And how much? What is that proposal?
Oh, it would be a Willits-like, under one iteration of it, it would be a Willits-like shopping center. There was a lot of concern from Carbondale and Glenwood that City Market would locate there. So Carbondale approving the new City Market, which reminds me that the Kroger City Market's supposed to close on that land this month, so we have to check on that, mm-hmm. Would have taken tax money away from both towns, and there's a housing proposal there. But the Rafta corridor access, and then the developers wanting to move entrances and so forth has really hung that up.
Right. Can you imagine, of all that development along 82, I mean, it's all the same type of thing, right? I mean, it's like you drive up from Glenwood, you've got Willits-like mm-hmm. town center at Cattle Creek, and then you go up, and then there's another thing just like it, and then another one, and then another one, and another one.
Then you cross into Pitkin County.
Right. I mean, that just seems like it should have all be coordinated.
Absolutely.
Know? Garfield should be talking to Eagle, and Eagle should be talking to mm-hmm. Garfield and Pitkin County and all of it.
And the housing strategy, these various jurisdictions really ought to put their heads together and maybe set some targets and figure out standards for, auxiliary dwelling units and rules that a lot of people think would help alleviate not solve it, but help alleviate some of the housing crunch.
Right.
This is what happens when you have three separate counties, all these different municipalities trying to solve the same problem, but maybe taking different approaches.
Right, it's piecemeal.
Looking at it through different lenses, right, it becomes piecemeal when in the reality is it's one, you know, it's one valley.
Right, it is now, but I mean, 15 years ago, I don't think we had looked at it like that. This is Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. That was Curtis Wackerly of the Aspen Daily News, and I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. It's our winter pledge drive, and if you value this show, help support it today with your financial contribution. Call 920-9000 or log on to aspenpublicradio.org, and thanks. One could argue that all the development in the Mid-Valley, and Scott, you can weigh in on this, has all been kind of piecemealed, and now we're kind of seeing the effects of that.
Yeah, what effects are you seeing?
Well, I mean, is there a coordinated traffic plan? When you're dealing with, like, Blue Lake, and then you've got Willits, and then what you got, City Market, has it all been thought out with a bigger picture in mind?
Yeah, that's certainly what I'm hearing from people that attend a lot of the land use meetings. They're saying, hey, we're getting slammed by traffic, and you know, there just doesn't seem to be a coordinated plan between projects X, Y, and Z.
RAFTA just pointed out that traffic at the south end of Glenwood, where there's a consistent count, has rebounded to pre-recession levels, has grown a lot the last 2 years, and is saying, look, this makes it all the more important that we preserve our rail corridor for future transit, whether it is widening 82 or creating the long-discussed light rail.
And Curtis, you had a great story in Thursday's paper about how one developer is threatening a lawsuit against the city of Aspen. He happens to be the municipal court judge as well, because in Aspen's attempt to, some would say it's trying to manage growth and development through a chain store regulation. That's what Jerry Murdoch, one of the citizens who brought this ordinance forward, would say, is that he's trying to limit development in downtown core by regulating.
Right, by taking away the potential for these big national yes. anchor tenants to come right. in.
And they're having an open house on Thursday night, mm-hmm. and the city's not doing it because they're too maxed as far as the community development department goes. And it really seems to me, and other observations from people seem to suggest, that the city doesn't really want any public feedback on this.
Because
it's related to the moratorium.
I don't know if I would say that. Well, I mean, this gets down to coordination of or a lack thereof. Maybe just backing up a little bit. The city is about to wrap up a year-long moratorium that was called in order to revise the land use code and change some things that a lot of people – we were feeling like the land use code we had was allowing projects that did not really fit the community vision as outlined in the Aspen Area Community Plan. We wanted certain things, but the land use code, you put it in there, you plugged in all the variables, and you got something that – we didn't like. So the whole goal of this moratorium was to change that and to align the land use code with kind of the community vision. And it was an extensive process. We hired 6 different consultants, hundreds of thousands of dollars, to look at, you know, every facet of Aspen land use and recommend some changes. In the summertime, interestingly enough, the consultants who were hired by the city and were working with the community development department proposed a whole menu of options to the city council for regulating the downtown use mix. And this is kind of getting at, are there too many high-end chain stores? How do we support locally serving business? You know, what do we want to do? And the council at that time pretty explicitly took a pass on doing anything that involves what specific type of business is allowed to locate in certain spaces. You know, we didn't want to get into defining what is locally serving or not, or looking at someone's ownership structure. There wasn't a whole lot of discussion specifically on the point of should we cap or regulate chains, but they did not, at that point, they didn't show a lot of interest in going that direction. It was much more the form of the building. So they required smaller buildings with smaller spaces in these kind of nook and cranny sort of designs off the alley, upstairs, downstairs, the so-called second tier spaces.
Right.
And so that was the official direction that the city council and the planning office were going. In the meantime, you had this group of citizens led by Jerry Murdoch, and he's been lobbying, he's been attracting support, and he wanted to specifically go after the chain stores because he sees this, you know, maybe not the problem, but the symptom of the problem. And so he brings it forward to the city council, spends a whole lot of time lobbying the community development department and the council to sort of accept what they were bringing forward.
He did it successfully.
And he did it successfully.
Right.
I mean, well, I guess we'll find out in 2 weeks when it's up for a vote.
And the council has been known lately to back down when it's thinking it's going to get sued, which is much different than a municipal government that I knew 15 years ago.
Right, who seemed to relish getting sued.
Yes.
So this is a long roundabout way.
On that note, I thought that's how we ended up with the art museum, because the council was afraid of getting sued.
They did get sued, and they were afraid they were going to lose at the Court of Appeals.
Yes. So they settled.
Right. So they settled. And, you know, for all the hard time people give the art museum, let's not forget that if that wasn't there, you would have another building more or less identical to the building on the corner, a block away, that is basically empty and
the
has
Lego
a,
building.
Yeah, and has a penthouse, and everyone hates that. So here we are, sort of at the final last 5 minutes of the game on this chain store ordinance and the moratorium. You're starting to see some, you know, a little more pushback on this. You know, I think the city does want public feedback on this. They want to hear what people have to say. And there's, you know, there's an online, it's AspenCommunityVoice.com. You can go and leave your comment there. Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a very spirited public hearing on this matter when it finally comes before the council. And here you have a major downtown landlord and developer saying, yeah, we're going to sue you if you do this.
Right.
Very clearly stating that.
I was waiting for that to come.
Right.
It was just a matter of...
Right. Well, I mean, every law firm in town has their people on this and is doing core requests to the city's email. I mean, there was just another one that came out this week. I mean, it's very interesting kind of how this is posturing out. And, yeah, I think they tried to sort of appease kind of the existing... everyone who's a current player by saying, okay, you're grandfathered in, because this does not affect anyone who's... You know, any current building.
Right.
It only affects you if you redevelop a building after this goes into effect.
Right. And the Sookie family, they're becoming rising landlords in downtown Aspen. They haven't officially applied for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be affected.
Correct.
And Brooke is part of that. Brooke Peterson is part of that.
And that's who signed the letter. But it was on behalf of Ajax Holdings, which represents the Sookie family and a lot of their properties.
Mm-hmm. You are listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. If you value what you are hearing, then please help pay for it. It's our winter pledge drive, and you can help us right now by calling 920-9000 to make your contribution today. Or you can go to aspenpublicradio.org. We now go back to our conversation. Let's talk about weed.
Okay.
Randy, you had a story about how Parachute's going to be the first drive-through pot store. In the meantime, Snowmass is keeping its moratorium. Basalt's had some controversy about whether a pot store should open in a certain location. The city of Aspen is kind of waiting to see what Denver does with pot clubs.
Mm-hmm.
So there's another whole thing that's kind of unifying us. And Parachute's like, bring it on, right?
Yeah, Glenwood Springs actually is going to have two more pot shops, grow operation and retail store that's going to be down Devereaux Road from the existing Green Dragon. And then Native Roots is going to open what it called in its application, Gas and Grass. It's an old BP station that is going to be converted to a marijuana convenience store. The city did, the rendering said Gas and Grass, and the city said, let's not do that. But down the highway in Parachute, which lost more than half of its sales tax revenue a couple of years ago because of the natural gas slump. So the city was in a real revenue crisis. The council approved recreational marijuana without a vote of the public. There was an effort to recall the council members, which failed. Then there was a vote by petition on rescinding what the council had done. It was the first of its kind in the state. And residents decided to go ahead and keep recreational marijuana, which now accounts for about a third, I believe, of Parachute's sales tax revenue. So they have approved this drive-through marijuana shop. It's in a car wash. So the logistics of this are, you know, you can't have anybody, an old car wash.
They're not replaced.
It's not an active car wash, because that would really be
a car wash. So the logistics of it are kind of tough, because nobody under 21 can be in a sales area. So they have to check everybody in the car's ID as you pull into the unit. I remember
okay, kids, get out of the car.
Just run over to the Wendy's and get us some burgers. We'll need those. There's a Wendy's right across the street. So, and boy, have they gotten publicity. That story was picked up internationally, as a matter of fact.
Because
It's the first one of its kind.
Right.
Right.
Or this is just moving, you know, it's really interesting to talk about how with the loss of natural gas taxes, we're turning toward toward the marijuana business.
The other thing that's coming out of the ground.
Yeah. But it's also kind of a shift from, you know, production to consumption.
Right.
Which you're seeing sort of more broader terms in a lot of things.
Scott, what were the headlines that came out of Basalt recently with the pot shop?
Basalt kind of keeps on tripping over itself to figure out what it wants to do with its marijuana regulations. You know, frankly, I think it kind of goes back to, I think when they first approved their regulations, it was kind of led by almost like a puritanical approach to it, and the council just kind of stumbled along with it. And so basically it had a much to do about nothing. It's they're trying to figure out whether they want a buffer zone away from certain amenities, and obviously, you know, you want it from schools and daycare, stuff like that. But then there was kind of a problem in search of a solution, in search of a problem with the getting away from parks. And I think what it boils down to is, yeah, they'll allow it on their main drag, Midland Avenue, but Councilman Tenenbaum suggests that maybe what they're trying to get at is not have it on a storefront facing Midland Avenue.
Right.
Seems like that would have been a much easier solution way back when, but instead they've had about 15 hearings trying to figure out what to do.
How did they settle on two, Scott? Do you have any idea? It's, you know, when they did this however many years ago, they decided they'd only let out two licenses for pot shops.
Yeah, it was pushed by certain staff members, and they suggested two rec licenses and two medical licenses.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was arbitrary selection.
Right.
And so one's already there, and now it's like there's one more available, and it sounds
where does
like
it, go?
It sounds like they're making accommodations for it to go on Midland.
Yeah. So they've loosened up the restrictions on where recreational pot shops can locate, and now that opens up more of Midland Avenue for shops. And I understand. I mean, some people just don't feel like, you know, that's kind of the prevailing attitude up in Snowmass, that they don't think it fits, and that's fine. I'm not criticizing anyone that thinks that way, but, I mean, if you're going to allow it, then don't do five pages of onerous regulations that no one really knows what they mean.
Yeah.
There was one other pot story this week that deserves a mention. A state water court referee, you know, essentially signing off on High Valley Farms getting a new water right to grow pot. And this appears to be somewhat precedent setting. It's not totally final yet. It could, you know, it could change. There's still kind of bureaucratic legal wheels turning, but it's sort of, you know, it's a fairly profound thing. And the question was, you know, should the state be involved in granting water rights for the pot industry when, you know, there's of course this conflict with federal law, and the person who sort of adjudicates these matters with the water court took a long look at it and said, I don't see any reason why we shouldn't allow this.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with it per the state law and the proper way water rights are applied for. So yeah, go ahead. It takes a lot of water to grow this stuff, and most of it is coming from pre-existing municipal plumbing. But yeah, surely we'll see more cases where we're applying for new water rights.
All right. Well, thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate it, gentlemen.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks, Carol.
Thanks. That was Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, Scott Condon, reporter for the Aspen Times, and Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post Independent. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. If you'd like to make a donation to help support this show and other programming on Aspen Public Radio, please call 920-9000 or go to aspenpublicradio.org today. Thank you for your support. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.